The views expressed on the Buckmaster Radio program are not necessarily the views of Bill Buckmaster Communications, LLC, or its sponsors.
Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster along with Tom Fairbanks. Tom, I hope you're having a very good day. I see you've got you brought your lunch in. It is a giant bag from McDonald's.
Yeah.
Tim Stellar, have you seen that? That's not a bag for one person, is
well,
it?
That's a shopping bag.
There's two cheeseburgers. That was two cheeseburgers. I munched them down.
That would be the bag that you and your entire family would get from
McDonald's. There should be a law, is what you're saying, right?
Sure.
We can look and see if there's any oats in there.
If you've got a cookie, save it for me. Okay. It is the Buckmaster Show on Friday. We like to do a shout out to the media partners. These are people that prominently display the Buckmaster Show logo so they can folks can link over to our website and hear all of our programs available on podcast. Dylan Smith and his organization, TucsonSentinel.com, Green Valley News and Saharita Sun, TucsonLifestyle.com, Tucson Media Group. They're a new group for us. That group includes Tucson Weekly, Inside Tucson Business, Explorer, Marana News, Foothill News, Desert News, and our other media partners, Southern Arizona News Examiners and Three Sonorans. Our Friday Focus interview today, Sheriff Mark Napier is with us. Sheriff, how are you?
I'm very well, Bill, and congratulations on the Tucson Weekly nod.
Very nice. Best radio talk show host, according to the staff at the Weekly. And I do try very hard to have a show that the listeners, the guests, the regular contributors, and myself, we can all be proud of.
Is there an award for best radio talk show guest? Doesn't feel fair, really.
Were you intending to nominate me, Tim? is that where this is going?
Yeah, sure. There you go. Tim Stellar is here, Tim, columnist for the Arizona Daily Star. Sheriff, you've been very visible since raising your right hand and being sworn in early January. It's hard to believe. It's coming up almost on a year. But you're all over the community. Do you ever log how many public events you go to?
Well, we do try to keep track to make sure that we're touching every part of the community and just to so that we know where we've been. About 3 weeks ago, just out of morbid curiosity, we counted it up, and it was 141 events since January that I've appeared at or spoke at. And these all community events of very diverse backgrounds, from parades to meetings with the ACLU. I've met with the ACLU three times, a League of Women Voters. So it really is the whole landscape of our community, as it should be. In January, I was elected to be the sheriff of all people of Pima County, not a certain constituency. And so I should be out in the community a lot. And I know it sounds trite, but I love people. I love public service. And for me to be out in the community is the best part of my job.
Talk a little bit about your staffing situation. We had Chief Magnus of the City of Tucson on the program a couple of weeks ago. I don't think, Tim, you were with me.
That was
Dylan Smith actually with us. We were talking about at the top of the list, their concern right now, Sheriff, as you know, is staffing and getting enough officers on the street. In fact, your son right now is out in a squad car, in a patrol car, and working as a Tucson police officer. How does the Sheriff's Department compare to staffing with the city?
We're in a much better position, Bill. We're down about 30 deputies right now, and we'll be running a class in February to try to get back closer to what we recognize as full staffing. I've challenged my staff to come up with what is the algorithm, what constitutes full staffing. And people can tell me there's a number, but we can't tell me what the origination, how does that number actually arrived at? And if you knew the algorithm, if you could change the variables in that algorithm over time, you would know what this correct staffing model was. So we'll be looking at that and determine what those variables are. But we're doing much better. We very seldom have a call that holds more than, you know, a very brief period of time. And if a call holds for more than an hour, a commander has got to be notified. And in the city of Tucson right now, it's not atypical for a call to hold 3 or 4 or 5 hours. Mm. And it's very frustrating to the officers there, I know, because my son faces it every day. He said, Dad, I end up talking to people who are mad at me all day. And he said, you know, I got the call 5 minutes before I arrived at the door, but for them it held for 3 or 4 hours.
Whoa.
So what's the difference? Why you're talking about Tucson police having long call waits. Why is that not the case in Pima County?
It's volume of work and staffing. Their call load is much higher than ours, and the staffing model is much different. I was, as you know, a Tucson Police Department captain on the south side. I think we had about 1,000 sworn when I was down there. I didn't feel like I really had enough officers to do the level of police work that I wanted to do down there at 1,000 sworn, and I think they're somewhere around 825 right now. And I know Chief Magnus is just doing a stellar job with what he has to work with. And I consider him a good friend, a good colleague. But he's just really in a difficult position with staffing right now.
You know, you brought up something about how you find that right mix. I mean, I'm sure you look at kind of the overall population. How does that all play in? What would be the optimal for the Sheriff's Department as far as deputies?
Well, I think when we get back to what we currently identify as full staffing, we'll be close. But a lot of that, without going into a real cerebral discussion about the nature of law enforcement, how you provide service, and what type of service you want to provide, you know, there's been equations where you would say, well, we'd want a third of our deputies' time to be not allocated otherwise. In other words, you're not on calls and you're not on administrative tasks. And that would allow them to go out and proactively work problems, engage in community policing, and that sort of thing. So, I mean, there's that aspect of it. But I think you need to look at geographic disbursement in the county. We're 9,200 square miles. So we have a very big area. So you've got geographic disbursement and call load disbursement. So somewhere in there, and I don't know that any law enforcement executive has figured it out perfectly, is an algorithm that would say, based on this geographic disbursement, this call load, this aspiration toward what type of law enforcement service you want to provide, if you put these variables together, it will spit you out the correct staffing number. And I think if somebody could come up with that, they'd probably make a lot of money.
Because, Tim, after all, that isn't when as far as the public is concerned, I think that's what's most important, knowing in the back of your mind that if you need a police officer or a sheriff's deputy, you're going to get that officer to your door in a timely manner.
Yeah, sure. And but although I'd add one thing, I think there's this question of whether officers have deputies in the case of your department have the presence that deters crime, but at least in the case of traffic, you know, the people know there's somebody watching just in case, that possible ne'er-do-wells know that. Do you think you have that situation now?
No, I think we're better equipped than the city of Tucson. I mean, if you look at the city of Tucson and you drive across that, there is no sense of any trepidation about getting a traffic ticket for bad driving, because the ability to proactively enforce traffic violations is very low. And one would only have to think that there's a causality between that and the number of fatal accidents that we're experiencing.
These crosswalks and...
All of those things. So I've actually asked my deputies, when you're not otherwise busy with something, you know, be in a visible spot, you know, run some traffic, because people do care about that. And traffic safety is one of the things that only law enforcement can provide the community.
And are you saying then that... you are able, your staffing and call load allows the sheriff's department to do it in a way that the police department can't at this stage because of their call load and staffing?
I would say we're better equipped to do it. We have more capacity than the city of Tucson currently does. And that's not to cast aspersions at my friend Chief Magnus at all. It is a situation, and I think they're doing the very best they can. I still know and have a lot of affection for a lot of people in the Tucson Police Department. I think they're just doing a tremendous job. And I think our deputies, I'm so very proud of the line level deputies and the service that they provide, but moreover, their commitment and their desire to provide that service. And one of the things I always hear from them is, Sheriff, we want to go to calls. So when anybody calls the Pima County Sheriff's Department, you're going to get a deputy. Even if your garden hose got stolen, we're going to send somebody out. And the deputies like that level of policing. They really do.
And I'm very curious about pay, how the city stacks up against a young person or someone who'd like to get into law enforcement. What can the sheriff's department offer versus the city?
Well, I don't want to go into a competitive thing because they'll say I'm poaching their their applicants. It's a hard pool to draw from.
Okay.
I think that generally counties provide a different type of law enforcement. It's more rural.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's more autonomy for a sheriff's deputy probably than there is a municipal officer. What I think compensation is one element. I think the general flavor of the organization is another one. I remember telling my wife Marlene shortly after we were married that if I could ever make $10 an hour, we'd have the world by the tail. So, you know, if you pay people, eventually they start to live within their means, and that's not a motivator anymore. So you've got to look for other motivations to keep people on the job. But we certainly have to be competitive in the marketplace. Law enforcement is not viewed as a really desirable career field anymore because a lot of societal pushes on it. And I've dealt with that with my son. When the officers were killed in Dallas, Texas, my son called me, and we had a very heartfelt conversation about that. And he said, "Dad, when you were a police officer and you'd go off to work on the South Side, I knew you might not come back, and I knew you might get killed. And I didn't want it to happen, but I went to bed, and I realized that was your profession." And he said, "Now I'm a cop, and I realize I could lose my life." He said, "But Dad, I never signed up to get hunted like an animal." And that's a different way of looking at things.
It really is.
And
I want to get a little into that a little more after we take the break. Sheriff Mark Napier is with us. Tim Steller is here from the Star. If you'd like to join the conversation, 790-2040. And my question for the sheriff when we come back, why would a young person even want to go into law enforcement in this particular climate we live in? We'll be right back. Tucson now has its own Creole restaurant. Named after the classic New Orleans cocktail, Sazerac Creole Kitchen and Cocktail Parlor is located in St. Philip's Plaza at River and Campbell. The New Orleans-inspired menu includes a full range of gumbos and much-loved beignets. See you soon at Sazerac, open daily, 8 a.m. to midnight at St. Philip's Plaza.
Fiery chili, decadent chocolate, enduring traditions at Tohono O'Toole's annual Chilies and Chocolate Festival. Enjoy culinary demonstrations, Day of the Dead face painting, live music, and local art Friday and Saturday, October 27th and 28th from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. Throughout the gardens, vendors feature Day of the Dead-inspired crafts, chili roasting, chocolate and culinary tastings, and more. Tickets are $15 for general public and $5 for members. For more information, visit tohonochoole.org.
Since 1944, the Humane Society of Southern Arizona has helped over 1 million pets in Southern Arizona. I'm Richard Carmona, 17th Surgeon General of the United States and Distinguished Professor at the University of Arizona. Join me in supporting the Humane Society of Southern Arizona in their effort to build a new animal welfare center. Keeping the pets in our community safe and healthy helps ensure that our community as a whole is safe and healthy. Please donate now, because we are all in this together.
The Southern Arizona News Examiner, reporting the stories missed by the mainstream media. Our sources bring you regional, national, and international news from a different perspective. Opinion from top national columnists, plus Eric Peters with auto reviews, Bob Garver on movies, a section on Western heritage, and sports coverage too. It's a cross-section of information found nowhere else. SOAZNewsX.com. Subscriptions are free at SOAZNewsX.com.
Southern Arizona is home to one of the world's most trusted sources of information on medicines. The Credible Meds website is visited each day by over 2,000 people from more than 60 countries. You too can learn how to personalize your medications and take control of your health care. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and join Bill Buckmaster each month as he and Dr. Ray Woosley, founder of Credible Meds, give you practical tips on how to get the most from your medications.
If you're searching for that special one-of-a-kind item, may I suggest Adobe House Antiques? It has a vast collection and variety of antiques, lighting, and fine art. In addition to the interior space, a large outdoor location offers an extensive collection of vintage patio furniture, exterior lighting, and ironwork. Come see Penny at 2700 North Campbell, 325-9439, or on the web at adobehouseantiques.com.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastro pub, serving an impressive menu of craft beer and fine fare. Choose from more than 175 beers from around the world, plus wine and a full bar. Enjoy delicious soups, salads, burgers, sandwiches, hearty entrees, and more. Craft beer, fine fare, great service, and stunning views. Noble Hops, perfect for lunch, dinner, happy hour, late night, and any time in between. Open daily at La Cañada and Lambert Lane in Oro Valley. This is Bill Buckmaster. Coming up Monday, the Monday Political Face-Off features commentators John Munger and Vince Robigo. Our Planetary Science CEO interview with Dr. Mark Sykes. Also, UA Sports Guy, Anthony Gimeno, Buckmaster, noon to 1 on AM 1030, KVOI, Tucson's Voice. Welcome back. The Friday edition of the Buckmaster Show. Pima County Sheriff Mark Napier is with us, and Tim Steller, columnist from the Arizona Daily Star. And I kind of did a little tease before the break saying my question to the sheriff would be, and you admitted that this is not, law enforcement is not looked upon as the same profession it was certainly when I was growing up, and my uncle was a police captain in Wellmette, Illinois. And I mean, Uncle Art, everybody respected like you wouldn't believe. I mean, it's like he walked on water. It's a different game out there, and it's a different profession. Why does a young person even look toward law enforcement?
Well, I guess I'm biased. I've given my life to this. I started in 1981, and I love this profession. I would go back and do it all over again. I have this infectious enthusiasm for law enforcement. It probably rubbed off on my son a little bit. This is such a unique profession because you can, and I know it sounds trite, but you can really do some good. If your heart's in the right place and you expend your energies correctly, you can do a lot of good. And I would hope that people still want to step up and make a difference for their communities. And I don't know of any other profession where you can, with a good heart and good intention and good training and all those things, make a true difference. And sometimes you don't know the difference you made because you see people in very bad situations and you may never see the good part of what you've done. But it allows people to interact with their community in a way that you can't in any other profession. And I believe in public service. I think it's a noble calling. You're never going to get rich. I can't promise kids that. If you come to work for my department, you're not going to get rich, but we'll pay you an adequate salary. And, you know, we don't have layoffs that are, you know, in the public sector. You have merit system protection. We still have some degree of pension benefits.
And is it camaraderie, too? Is that an element?
Well, there's an esprit de corps element of it, and I think that certainly I'm very proud. I wear my uniform every day, which is kind of an oddity for sheriffs, but I believe in it. I drive a marked unit because I love this profession. I'm committed my life to public service. My wife is a nurse. She's committed her life to service, and it's in you or it's not, and I think that people can make a real difference. And I hope that would inspire people to join the profession. Sometimes it's not all glamorous.
What did you mean when you said we still have, I think you said something to the effect that we still have some pension or something. My understanding was that, you know, that's one of the true benefits of a police career, that you take risks and you have a difficult shifts and stuff. But in the end, after 20 to 25 years, you got a pension at least. What? Tell me about it.
No, actually, that's changing, Tim, and that's going to be a real stress on my profession. We were talking about that yesterday. We're going from a defined benefits program, which is a traditional pension, and law enforcement corrections is moving toward a defined contributions program, much like a 401k type thing. I understand why we need to do that from the aspect of stabilizing the pension system. But for law enforcement is a strategic look, you know, down the road, I think it is a terrible move because we're not going to get our hooks in somebody. When I started this profession, I knew I had to be in it for 25 plus years to get my pension, and that kept me there. A kid that comes in a defined benefit or a defined contributions program, you know, the first time you say, we have to go to midnights with the middle of the week off, they start thinking, well, you know, I've got $4,000 in my 401k. I'm just going to pick up and I'm going to go do something else. Well, we have expended, meaning the county or the city, municipality, has expended the training funds and to equip and train this person. That turnover is going to be a real problem. And I've talked to Mr. Huckleberry about this at length. We're going to be doing some really innovative things with compensation to attract and retain the best and brightest to the Pima County Sheriff's Department. So we're going to champion a compensation program that's based on merit, that has an educational component to it, that provides a predictable pathway to the top of the pay range. Because I need to get them up there in order to retain them. We're losing a lot of these people that are in the, 2 to 5 year range with no possibility of compensation increases. And that's not a good bargain for the people and the taxpayers of this county.
Is that where you lose most of your people in that window of 2 to 5 years?
We're losing a lot of people in that window. Tucson Police is losing people. We've got to remain competitive in the marketplace for these employees. But moreover, what I want to do is not simply remain competitive, but I want to attract the best and brightest. And then once I get them in the door, I want to be able to retain them because it's a good bargain for the people of this county. And so we're going to be doing some really unique things with compensation. I've talked to Mr. Huckleberry. I think he's on board with some ideas that I have in that regard. And so it's just kind of stay tuned on that. I think there's some good things coming.
Go ahead, Tim.
Oh, I was just going to ask. You mentioned you've been in police work for a long time. Is there any difference in the kind of people who are joining police forces these days?
Well, yeah, Tim, I think there's a difference between, the baby boomers as a body of people and millennials. And, you talk about the generational differences, so there's certainly those things. But when I started in 1981, most of the people that had any time on came out of Vietnam. They were prior military. They weren't sure what to do post-Vietnam, and they became law enforcement officers. So perhaps they were not, really book smart or any of those things, but they had a great street smarts about them. They had a great life experience. They were used to operating in a paramilitary environment. So it was a different type of person. And now the millennials are less attached to employment. I had this great sense of loyalty to my employer. And millennials are kind of, what can you do for me? How can I be self-actualized through my employment? And it's got to be stimulating to me. And there's a whole different, I'm not casting aspersion at millennials. I'm just saying there are profound differences between somebody who's 25 and somebody who's my age. I'm not saying better or worse, simply different. And law enforcement's got to adapt to that. We've got to make this an attractive career field for millennials. And you do that in a variety of ways. But you've got to stimulate these young people and show them a defined career path that is rewarding in some way.
How about some initiatives, real quickly? I wanted to let you have a chance. This is some things that you really care about that you have pushed with the Sheriff's Department. What's at the top of your list?
Is cultural change. We need to really embody a firmer commitment to education. We're developing a strategic work plan for the department, which is something completely new, which should not be. I asked staff in a meeting a couple of weeks ago, tell me where we'll be in 3 years. And it kind of looked like you'd run into that herd of deer beside the road
years.
At night.
What about 3 weeks, right?
And simply surviving till 5 o'clock each day and not having a major catastrophe is not a good strategic plan. So we're working on a strategic work plan, which will roll out in January, that's going to define what we intend to accomplish in my first term as your sheriff. Mm-hmm. And they should be innovative things. They should be things that guide the agency forward. So we're doing that. I think the relationship among sheriffs in the state is better than it ever has been. There's a lot of good that can come out of that. So I'm a very busy guy. I kind of have a ADD when it comes to my profession. I tend to have more interest than I have time.
This is a good question that Tom just put up on the screen, and I was actually thinking about it when the sheriff was talking about millennials. They're so into the devices, and they know so much about technology, and I'm kind of wondering, and so is Tom on the other side of the glass, what has technology done to advance police work, and with body cameras and all that stuff?
Well, we have computers in the cars, which was unimaginable to me in 1981. I mean, that just was not even, we didn't have cell phones.
Right.
So we're better at what we do. We're better at documenting what we do. We're more efficient because of technology. But I think law enforcement's challenge is not to bring on technology for the sake of technology, which there's that trap of you've got to get the newest thing or whatever, but make sure you're making strategic decisions with technology. What's the return on investment of integrating this particular technology into our line of work? And I think mobile display computers in the cars make perfect sense. We're better because of that. We can access a ton of information in our vehicles.
Robotic and technology?
Robotic technology with respect to how we do tactical situations.
Right, right.
We can introduce a robotic element into the environment without having to put people in jeopardy. There's just a lot of things like that.
Body cameras?
I'm not a fan of body cameras yet. Okay. I'm not a fan of that technology just yet. I think it needs to be developed a little bit more. And there are significant costs associated with the adoption of body cameras that the vendors don't always let you know about up front, but the management of a body camera program is really expensive.
Is that what you don't like about it, or is there another reason?
That's a primary thing. There's the technology part and the cost part, but also that I think the public needs to understand that a body camera does not show you everything I see. It is a very one-directional focus, and it often will not show things that led up to where we are. It can never give you the benefit of 30 years of my experience. I see things when I look at people that you'll never see because of experience, training, and stuff. And sometimes that little vignette of 5 or 10 seconds of video can look really bad out of context. So I think we need to be careful about how we look at those videos.
All right. Sheriff Napier, thank you very much for coming by. Good luck.
I'm very happy to be here, Bill.
Thanks.
Good to see you, Tim.
All right. Tim Steller sticks around. Jim Nintzel joins us from the Tucson Weekly. There's so much to talk about now in our Friday roundtable discussion about Jeff Flake. Mr. Nintzel was emceeing or hosting a four or five-way debate last night with the CD2 Democratic candidates. We'll hear all about that. Let's take the break and be right back. This is Bill Buckmaster. One of my passions is travel, visiting over 100 countries in all 50 states. When I'm ready to take off, I fly from Tucson International Airport. With 6 airlines flying nonstop to 19 destinations and easy one-stop connections, I can get virtually anywhere in the world. It's close by, convenient, with competitive airfares, and the best part is there's no long drive coming back home after a long trip. Check out flytucson.com, travel smart, and fly Tucson. It's the way to go. The Regional Transportation Authority funds projects helping make our transportation system safe, reliable, and efficient, and improved mobility leads to a better economy and new jobs through the increased flow of people, goods, and services. More efficient access gets us to where we want to go faster, and that means more time for family. Working together for a better future, more at rtamobility.com.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Vero Amore is Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, panini, and salad is homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino and on Dove Mountain Boulevard in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore on the web at veroamore.com.
For almost 40 years, the Community Foundation for Southern Arizona has worked with individuals, families, businesses, and nonprofits to create a stronger community. We connect you with the causes you care about, transforming your vision for our community into meaningful, charitable impact. Make a difference now and forever. Please visit cfsaz.org or call 520-777-0800 to learn more about the Community Foundation for Southern Arizona.
As a small business owner, I know the importance of a certified public accountant you can trust.
That's why I recommend my CPA, Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates, proud sponsors of the Buckmaster Show. Located at 2919 East Broadway and on the web at flowersrieger.com, or follow the live link on buckmastershow.com.
Did you know that you can check out complete digital editions of popular magazines with your Pima County Public Library card? From Arizona Highways to Yoga Journal and everything in between, the library is your source for entertainment. Visit library.pima.gov and browse the e-library to start checking out your favorite magazines today. That's library.pima.gov.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Today, more than ever, consumers want to work with a business they trust. Hi, this is Suzanne Miller with your Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona, reminding you that thousands of consumers go to tucson.bbb.org every week to inquire about trustworthy businesses. Is your business accredited with BBB? To find out more, call Celeste Angelini at 520-345-5837 or go to tucson.bbb.org, and remember to always start with trust.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show, and certainly we have a lot to discuss over the next 10, 15 minutes. So much has happened in the political realm this week. Tim Steller sticks around. Tim, columnist for the Arizona Daily Star. He was with me in our first half hour as we interviewed Sheriff Napier, and I think that was a good discussion about really kind of why people even go into law enforcement these days. Jim Nintzel is with us. Jim is the editor of the Tucson Weekly, and he's kind of taken a deep breath after putting together their big signature edition, the best of edition. Jim, how are you?
Oh, we're recovering, Bill. we no sooner got that paper out the door than all heck broke loose on the political front. So it's been an exciting week.
Let's, of course, begin with the announcement, Jeff Flake. No one really saw this one coming, Tim. You were surprised like everybody else, right?
Sure, absolutely. Yeah.
Jim, this opens the door to – before we talk about what's next, I want to go a little bit into what Tim talked about in his column on Wednesday about political courage and why did Senator Flake decide to in effect quit rather than face off against Kelly Ward?
You want me to go with that?
Why don't you start, and then Jim can jump in.
So my argument in the column was that, you know, if he believed, if the situation is as dire as he made it out to be in the speech he gave, then the courageous thing is to stand and fight and keep it up. There was a lot, I'd say about 50-50 split in reaction to that. So a lot of people thought I was too hard on him, that he had been taking the risk. But I still am not convinced. And we'll see how he behaves over the next 14 months in terms of calling out the excesses of the Trump administration. But I'm not convinced that he's living up to his words.
Jim, what do you think about that?
Well, I think you can still expect Jeff Flake to vote along with his fellow Republicans on many, many issues for the duration of his time in the Senate. I think the reason he's probably not seeking re-election is he recognized that he would not beat Kelly Ward in a primary. I think he acknowledged that himself, and I think his thinking must be that he would prefer Kelly Ward not be the next senator from Arizona, and that if he steps down, someone else may step up who would defeat Kelly Ward and thereby make it easier for Republicans to hold on to the seat and also disrupt Kelly Ward's plans to go to the U.S. Senate. So I imagine that's kind of the political calculation he's making, but it is very rare to see somebody who is in his 50s and is first term, leaving before he even goes for a second term, and I think that speaks to the weirdness of the Republican base right now, where they seem to celebrate the sort of disruption of American norms and traditions, which seems to be an anti-conservative position to take, but there you go.
Yeah, that's a huge point, and I think one I've been really trying to delve into and ponder a lot lately. For example, I wrote a little item about the Paul Gosar situation. To keep it really brief, you know, he did an interview in which he claimed that leftists were behind the Nazi rally in Charlottesville, and perhaps George Soros, who himself, he alleged, you know, had been a Nazi sympathizer when he was a Jew growing up in Hungary. All right. This is the kind of stuff, this is the drift of the Republican Party that I believe Jeff Flake both is trying to disagree with and that he felt he couldn't defeat. And that's what's troubling to me, is that the Donald Trump's win and his takeover of the party is encouraging the growth of this, I consider it almost a psychosis. A break from reality.
That if you are not 100% on board with Donald Trump,
not just that. You have to be 100% on board, but you also have to be willing to believe anything. And so that speaks to the Paul Gosar example is just one of numerous. And I am fascinated to see whether a reality-based candidate can win the GOP race or not. I think that's, for me, that's what I'm really looking forward to knowing.
And is Martha McSally going to be that reality-based candidate? And it looks more and more, according to that USNews.com report, that Martha McSally looks like she is going to be moving forward in going into the Senate race. Jim, do you think that's going to happen? And if it does, can she beat Kelly Ward?
You know, before I get into that, I just want to echo something that Tim was saying about that whole Gosar thing. You know, I think it's great Tim's following up on that, and CNN has as well, and they tried to actually confront Gosar and ask him for any kind of evidence of these claims, and he ran away yelling, fake news, fake news, and it was just a very bizarre thing to watch on CNN yesterday. Back to McSally, I'm sure she's doing polling, I'm sure she's giving it a lot of thought, and trying to figure out, you know, is this the best move for her? I mean, she's having some significant drops in her own approval rating in CD2, if the polls that I've heard about are true. And I think jumping into that Senate race is something that would be very attractive to her because, number one, it's a promotion, and number two, in terms of the voter registration, she has a little bit more of an advantage running statewide than she does with CD2. And if you look at the generic congressional ballots right now, I think the Democrats have like a 15-point lead, and that's not good if you're running in a split district like CD2.
Yeah, I think just to elaborate on what Jim said there, she is running for re-election in a district that lost, in which Hillary Clinton won. Republicans lost the presidential race. If she wins the nomination and runs statewide, she's running in a district, so to speak, that Donald Trump won.
Right. It's more favorable for
her.
Yeah,
so, man. But the problem, I mean, there's lots of problems, but from her perspective, there's the hump of getting over the hump of the primary, and that's tough.
Mm-hmm. Let's go to the live line real quickly. Bill is up first. Bill, you're on the air. Go ahead, sir.
Yeah, hi there.
What's on your mind?
I voted for Donald Trump, and the reason I voted for Trump is because of John McCain and Flake and the rest of the Republicans who said that they want to live by the rule of law and that they want to enforce immigration laws. And then as soon as they got elected, they came out with a Gang of Eight bill. So most of the people that I know who voted for Trump are interested in the rule of law. We're interested in legal immigration, not illegal immigration. We pay our taxes. We try to do it right. We try to play fair. And we're sick of being screwed.
Okay.
So, hey, Bill, can I ask you what you thought of Trump's pardon of Joe Arpaio?
I thought it was a good thing. And the reason
so
I
So in
that
case,
that
rule of law was not on your mind.
Rule of law was, why is Obama instructing our sheriffs and our border patrol to let illegal aliens into the country?
All right. Thanks. Thanks, Bill.
Thank you.
All right. Paul is next. Hello, Paul. Hi, Paul.
Yes.
Real quickly, please.
Yeah. It's a good program to get news, but it seems like these reporters that you have here today are just sounding boards to the Democrat Party.
Okay. Thank you, Paul, for that comment. How will – it looks like that McSally – so, Jim, do you think McSally – how would she fare, getting back to my original question about Kelly Ward, how do you think that would shape up?
Well, I think a lot depends on who gets into the race. I mean, I don't think they will be the only two candidates. I think plenty of people. I think Robert Graham has already indicated, the former chair of the Arizona Republican Party, has already indicated he wants in. I've heard the name Jay Hyler dropped. Certainly some of the other members of Congress may have some ambitions in that direction.
No, so, apparently Trent Franks says he's not going to get in, and Gosar, no, and Swikert, David Schweikert, no.
Have they all said no? Well,
yeah.
I believe that we've got the congressional delegation is all out except for McSally,
right.
If I'm not mistaken.
Yep, and apparently, according to this USNews.com report, there was a closed-door meeting with Arizona's five-member GOP House delegation last night with McSally. Senator McCain was also consulted about her being in a statewide contest, and the source they quote says, quote, she wants to lay down a marker immediately. She hates the House. So, I don't know.
That is a fascinating source. We don't know who actually said that.
No,
or
we don't.
Source. But
no.
I would not be surprised if she's frustrated by the House. I mean, I don't know that she'll be any less frustrated with the Senate. that said, I think we're going to have to see how the playing field breaks down. And, there's still some possibility that John McCain won't be able to finish his term. And we could have a second Senate race open up, which could lead to a whole other batch of candidates.
Well,
I
was just going to say, we need to take this now to the next level. If McSally does get into the Senate race, what happens in CD2? Jim, you were hosting, I believe, or moderating a five-way debate or forum last night with the five Democratic candidates in CD2.
Yeah, they all turned out for this forum at Rincon High School, my alma mater. And talked about the issues for about 90 minutes, and we're mostly stuck to the positive. A few snipes at Ann Kirkpatrick, but otherwise they seem to agree on a lot of things. And you got a chance to kind of see their style and how they handle themselves in front of a crowd. But the fact that there's so much interest in this race this early, and Ann Kirkpatrick, I think, is going to prove to be the biggest fundraiser, but a lot of people are saying, well, she's not grassroots, she's carpetbagging, she's just getting here to Tucson. So she has that to contend with
and
she faces off against these other four. And then on the Republican side, we'll have to wait to see who decides they want to come forward and run for Congress if McSally's not there.
Yeah, I've been talking to some people about what happens on the Republican side if Representative McSally leaves. And frankly, people on the Republican side are pretty mystified as to who would be the candidate. There would likely be a variety of relatively low-ranking candidates who would pop up, but there's not a solid leader that comes to mind. And here again, I'm talking to Republicans who are casting about trying to think of someone.
Well, this would put the Dems in a pretty good position. And about the carpet bagging, I brought that up with Ann Kirkpatrick when she was on my show this week, Jim and Tim, and she says that so untrue. She's got all these deep roots going back to Tucson with U of A family members. On and on and on. So whatever.
Yeah, look, I mean, she is carpet bagging, but the question is whether anyone cares. You know
right.
what I mean? It is totally, you can run for an office across a state if it's a house that you're running for. You don't have to live in the district. So it'll come down to whether voters like her or not.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm curious to know, does David Gowen, I know Tim wrote about Gowen getting back into a state Senate race, but, you know, he ran for Congress last time. He didn't do very well. I think he dropped out before he even, before a primary even rolled along. And I think that's partially due to the reporting that Hank Stevenson did, which Tim acknowledged from his time at the Capital Times, where he exposed Gowen's corruption in applying for funds he wasn't really eligible for and having to reimburse the state and using state resources on his campaign, et cetera, et cetera.
So you're thinking of him as a Republican candidate in CD2?
One never knows. I mean, I think David has all sorts of delusions of grandeur. So clearly, I'm sure the thought would at least cross his mind.
Are you hearing any other names, gentlemen, that you would like to throw out?
Oh, nothing that's good enough to throw out now. I mean, you know, people just go through their minds and think of elected officers, Republican elected officers in the various counties or districts that are part of CD2. And you know, you can think of them yourself.
Right.
I will say, and this is unconfirmed, I heard Allie Miller perhaps considering herself congressional timber.
You're not serious.
No.
I've heard it.
Well,
I don't know.
Who knows?
That was slipped my way earlier this week. It would be
everyone's
quite
got
a thing.
We all have delusions.
All right, Jim Nintzel, thank you, Jim, and you've got the best of Tucson issue. It's usually the big issue of the year, very popular, and I think you've got it's one of the bigger issues in recent times for the weekly, right?
Yeah, it's the first time we've broken 100 pages. Hit the century mark in a few years. So things are pretty upbeat down here right now.
Congratulations.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jim. All right, Tim, what's in the column on Sunday? Are you going to, after the show, try to hammer it out?
I already did my weekly switcheroo where I'm working on one column and then I decide to go back to a different idea.
Yeah, that does happen.
That happens about every week. I could still jump to a third idea, but I'm looking at the grades, school grades controversy the State Board of Education backed off, you know, issued these grades as final and then immediately said, no, they're preliminary. We're going to take another look at them.
All right. Tim and Jim, have a great weekend. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you.
All right. We'll be back. Dan Gibson to visit Tucson, filling in very ably for Matt Russell, who is wrapping up his trip over in France. We'll talk to Dan Gibson right after this. This is Bill Buckmaster. I love travel and flying from Tucson International Airport, and when you fly Tucson, you're standing up for Tucson. When more people fly Tucson, airlines respond with more flights, and with more flights, more travelers can get here to conduct important business. It's a win for the region, and it's a win for you in time saved and money saved not traveling to an airport 2 hours away. Next time you book a flight, type in TUS. Travel smart and fly Tucson. It's the way to go.
For almost 40 years, the Community Foundation for Southern Arizona has worked with individuals, families, businesses, and nonprofits to create a stronger community. We connect you with the causes you care about, transforming your vision for our community into meaningful, charitable impact. Make a difference now and forever. Please visit cfsaz.org or call 520-777-0800 to learn more about the Community Foundation for Southern Arizona.
The Regional Transportation Authority is on track to deliver the remainder of the promised projects in the 20-year plan, now in its 11th year. A recent 10-year performance audit finds the RTA sticking to the plan and schedule. The RTA applauds our members and partners for helping us to stay on schedule and to improve our transportation network for everyone. Working together for a better future, more at rtamobility.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local independent nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Did you know that you can check out complete digital editions of popular magazines with your Pima County Public Library card? From Arizona Highways to Yoga Journal and everything in between, the library is your source for entertainment. Visit library.pima.gov and browse the e-library to start checking out your favorite magazines today. That's library.pima.gov.
What comes to mind when you envision the holidays? If it means surrounding yourself with family and friends as you welcome treasured traditions, just imagine if those moments were paired with sinking your toes in fine white sand and exploring quaint seaside towns. This winter, spend your holiday with a sense of adventure on a family reunion vacation. At Bon Voyage, we specialize in bringing generations together through travel. This is the perfect time to plan. Call Bon Voyage Travel at 797-1110.
This is Bill Buckmaster. Green Things has been the place for all things green for the Buckmaster household for many years. From 2-inch succulents to 10-foot tall palms and desert trees, Green Things has it all on 13 acres and 33 greenhouses full of plants, pottery, and gardening supplies. Visit Green Things at 3384 East River Road by the Rito Riverwalk and on the web at greenthingsaz.com. The Twisted Tandoor, the legendary Indian food truck, now has a permanent brick-and-mortar home at Swan and Camp Lowell Drive. The menu expands on the popular Indian classic offerings from the original Twisted Tandoor food truck. The Twisted Tandoor, it's at 4660 East Camp Lowell Drive and on the web at thetwistedtandoor.com. All right, time for Weekend Watch, presented by Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico, which makes a great weekend getaway or even longer. Just 3-hour drive from Tucson and 15 degrees cooler to an area that has so much to offer. Great outdoor recreation, hiking, camping, exploring historic Silver City. If you want to do some antiquing, there's all sorts of opportunities there. Just relax in a lovely environment. Please visit southwestnewmexico.org. They have the full listing there of the great places to stay and the many recreation opportunities in Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico. Weekend Watch this week with Visit Tucson's Dan Gibson, who is ably filling in for Mr. Matt Russell, who is wrapping up a lovely holiday over in France. How are you doing, Dan?
I'm doing fine. This is my second week in a row, so I know Matt is filling in for me.
There you go.
It's my segment now.
It is. It's your yeah. You own it, baby. Take it away. I mean, what a great weekend! homecoming weekend. Lots going on.
Absolutely. So I think homecoming is a really big deal. I think one of the big events this weekend. I will say Cyclovia, which I always want to say is Cyclovia, but that is wrong. It is on 12th Avenue this year, October 29th. That's Sunday, 10 to 3 p.m. The route from on South 12th Avenue from West 39th to Mission Manor Park. It's 3¾ miles of locally owned businesses, great food, activity hubs, music, all kinds of great things going on. Get your bike. The 12th Avenue is pedestrian and bike only on that stretch.
Wow.
Sunday. So you get to live it up with no cars around. It'll be a blast.
This has turned into a big event for the cyclists.
It has, yeah. It's a lot of fun in general. Even if you don't have a bike, just head on down. There's the restaurants actually will have expanded outdoor seating. It'll be a lovely weekend to eat outside. And if you haven't spent time eating up and down 12th Avenue, your waist may not thank you, but your palate will. I just made that up.
Give us a couple of quick ones here.
Absolutely. Friend, speaking of food and the UNESCO City Gastronomy thing, here's a nice connection. The fifth annual Membrillo Fest at the Mission Gardens, Friends of Tucson's birthplace. That's tomorrow, 2:30 p.m. to 5:30 p.m. The Membrillo was brought here by the Spanish. It's the Kintz family. You can have they'll have desserts, they'll have drinks, refreshment, music. Connect to our gastronomy history there at Mission Gardens. And if you haven't been there, it's a ton of fun anyway. You get to see the whole sort of what people have been growing here for 4,000 years.
Kintz.
Yeah, go ahead.
I was just saying Kintz. That's an interesting food that was brought originally from Spain, right?
Exactly, right. It's a part of Tucson's culinary history.
One more quick one.
All Souls is coming up, obviously, next weekend, but a little bit of a preview of it tomorrow, 5 to 8 p.m. at the Botanical Gardens. They're doing a feast for the dearly departed. It's their sixth annual. There'll be face painters, music, pan de muerto, sugar skulls. Tucson High's Mariachi Reyes del Sol will be there.
Good
and
deal.
Vendors, great time out there at the Botanical Gardens.
Have a great weekend. Thank you very much.
I will. Thanks.
The Buckmaster Show is a presentation of Bill Buckmaster Communications, LLC, wholly responsible for the content of the program. Original theme music courtesy of Chris Stefan. Thanks to Rosemary Brandt, my assistant. My thanks also to the team at KVOI. Ray Allen, who is our operations manager, my producer Monday through Thursday. Tom Fairbanks, my producer and engineer on Friday. Thank you, Tom. Funny man and production manager Jerry Cross, the ladies up front, the whole staff at KVOI, all of us wish you a safe and pleasant weekend.